DW.
You know, sadly, it did. I had gone to Hong Kong hoping to release Human Rights Watch's annual World Report. It's a survey of 100 countries around the world, but each year I write an introduction highlighting a particular global concern. And this year my focus was on the threat the Chinese government is posing to the international human rights system. And, you know, sadly, the Beijing authorities made my point by preventing me from holding that conference, by preventing me from even entering Hong Kong. It was a bit ironic because I had been there a number of times before. And less than 2 years ago, I held a press conference at the very same locale in Hong Kong to highlight a Human Rights Watch report on gender discrimination in the job market in China. And that was completely uneventful. I met with journalists, I moved around, there was no problem. But there has been a very worrying deterioration in Beijing's respect for human rights, not only in Hong Kong, but actually throughout China. And now it is beginning to spread that anti-rights effort to the rest of the world.
Human Rights Watch has long criticized China for its treatment of Uyghurs in Xinjiang, erecting the Great Firewall to keep opposing views from abroad out, and implementing a social credit system to control its citizens, among other things. In the report, you argue China also threatens human rights on a global scale. Can you talk about this new quality of threats?
Yes. In others, I mean, you I think, correctly describe the worsening domestic situation in China. That is, a million Uyghur and other Turkic Muslims are in detention for forced indoctrination. There is a highly intrusive surveillance state that has been erected. Dissidents of all sorts, journalists, civic groups are shut down, imprisoned, and the like. So the Chinese government is basically maintaining its power through repression. There obviously are no elections. There's no political competition. And Beijing is getting increasingly sensitive about criticism of its repression from abroad. And so what we've seen is a deliberate effort to extend the censorship that it practices at home to the rest of the world. And it does that really in two ways. On the one hand, it uses its economic clout to try to force governments, businesses, individuals to be quiet about China's repression, indeed to even applaud it sometimes. And so you see this where it is, threatening to deny access to the huge Chinese market to companies that might criticize China or even have one of its employees criticize China. You see China trying to silence its own students who are studying at universities abroad. And it uses the so-called Belt and Road Initiative to try to buy loyalty from governments around the world, which is particularly important because it wants their votes at the United Nations. But one thing that we found is that the United Nations is indeed a central target of this effort to undermine the human rights system because it is the United Nations bodies that are often the main international forum for criticizing China. So we've seen at the UN Human Rights Council in Geneva that China systematically votes against any effort to condemn human rights violations in virtually any country around the world and actively rallies governments in support, using economic incentives and economic threats to try to get its way. In New York, China's teamed up with Russia at the UN Security Council to block action on some of the most dire situations in the world, whether it's Syria or Venezuela or the Rohingya in Myanmar. And even Antonio Guterres, the UN Secretary General, refuses to call publicly for China to release the 1 million Muslims in detention. It just shows that, even the UN's top leadership has been cowed by this kind of, combination of Chinese incentives and threats.
But there is backlash, isn't there? In July at the UN Human Rights Council, 25 governments came together and voiced their concerns over the crackdown in Xinjiang. Isn't that a positive sign?
Yes, that is an illustration of growing outrage at what China is doing. And indeed, we're trying to encourage more of that by spotlighting China's conduct in this year's Human Rights Watch World Report. But you're right, there were about 24 governments that came together at the UN Human Rights Council in Geneva, and then a couple months later again at the UN General Assembly in New York. And that was the largest joint statement of contempt that China had ever encountered. They immediately organized a counter statement and they, you know, had, I don't know, 50 or so governments sign on to it. It was the likes of, you know, Russia and Syria, Venezuela and North Korea, you know, hardly paragons of human rights virtue. But, you know, nonetheless, it showed that this joint condemnation had struck a nerve. The Chinese government has also been orchestrating show tours in Xinjiang, where they try to pass off the mass detention facilities as merely vocational job training. And, you know, they try to pretend that all the Uyghurs in detention are perfectly happy to be there. So, you know, these are kind of ham-fisted efforts to fight back, but it shows that governments can stand up to China. And indeed, one thing that we do is to recommend a number of steps that governments can do to be more effective in pushing back against China's assault on the human rights system. We actively encourage them to speak, you know, jointly, not to accept Beijing's preference of divide and conquer, but to band together, because, you know, China likes to be able to use its economic clout to target potential critics one by one. But they can't shut off the Chinese market to large numbers of countries. It's just not feasible. It would destroy the Chinese economy. And so there is sort of safety in numbers and greater effectiveness in numbers. We also have been actively discouraging the kind of private diplomacy that people like UN Secretary Antonio Guterres seem to prefer. You know, they like to go in and say, oh, well, I talked about Xinjiang privately with the Chinese authorities. But that does no good at all, because the real engines of change are the Chinese people. And if they can't hear the protests of a visiting dignitary, all they see is the photo ops with that dignitary shaking hands with Chinese authorities, lots of smiles, everything seems to be fine. And so we're pushing governments to be much more public in their criticism of Chinese repression, not to pretend that behind the doors representations make any difference.
Now, apart from China, you've also looked at around 100 countries on over 650 pages. Obviously, we can't talk about all of them now in our small segment. Did you notice any global trends? And if so, can you highlight those for us?
Well, you know, I think everybody is kind of aware of the global threat of autocratic populists. And, you know, people talk about, you know, Putin, you know, Orban in Hungary, Erdogan in Turkey, Sisi in Egypt, you know, Duterte in the Philippines, Maduro in Venezuela, etc. And, you know, that has been a trend over the last couple of years. But what we've noticed really over the last year is the remarkable pushback that has been taking place. You know, we saw popular uprisings overthrowing longtime dictatorial regimes in Algeria and Sudan. We saw the autocrats losing local elections in Turkey, in Hungary. There were, you know, big uprisings against Sisi in Egypt, big demonstrations against Putin in Moscow. So, you know, there is a real pushback. People have begun to recognize that these autocrats speak about serving the people, but in fact, they serve themselves and their cronies and basically their perpetuation in power. So we do see, you know, an interesting positive trend in reaction to these autocrats. And that, I think, should encourage us all.
DW.